Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 12:49, and that is Pacific Standard Time. And today the yen got almost up to 110, and you can see that this has been a pretty impressive rally by the dollar over the last 10 sessions, and it's been almost consecutive days on the upside. But 110 is a potential area of resistance, not least because it's a big round number, but also because there is a short-term overbought condition. Today I've seen the very first news item that is beginning to question just how effectively the fiscal stimulus and can possibly be affected by the slim majority in the Senate, and how successfully the new Trump administration might be able to muster a Republican Party, large parts of which ran on a ticket to oppose him. So, we're unlikely to have one-way activity in perpetuity, and there is certainly a short-term overbought condition for the dollar in here. And when we look at the yen, then that's a good example of it. But of course, that has also lent a tailwind to the Nikkei overall, and the Nikkei has been extending its breakout. And when we look at that on a weekly basis, it is quite emphatic. So any weakness there could likely be regarded as a buying opportunity, and really a sustained move below the MA around 17,000 would be required to question medium-term recovery potential. The dollar index is right at the 100 level. It is trading just very marginally above it at present, and this is raising some very large questions indeed. One of those is the extent to which it is likely to affect anybody who has taken out a dollar loan over the last decade and has to pay it back in an increasingly appreciating currency if your base currency is not in fact dollars. So there is, and that is of particular interest to, I suspect, Latin American markets, because so much of their economies are dollar based. What we also have here is a complete re-rating, that the dollar, not so long ago, there was a question as to whether this index was going to break upwards or downwards. It is now looking increasingly likely that it is going to break upwards, not least because of optimism that the new administration will introduce pro-growth strategies, and that the and regardless of whether that is going to lift the deficit or not, the impetus then will be on the Fed to raise interest rates. And the interest rate differential had really only begun to widen, but there is the prospect that it will continue to widen between the US dollar and particularly developed market currencies. But also that if the dollar is if dollar interest rates are rising, then the relative reward that investors will require from emerging markets in order to take the risk of investing outside of a strengthening currency regime to embark into the emerging markets, then the spread will have to be wider. And spreads are quite tight. In fact, I've posted a chart today of the CDS spread for emerging markets, and it is coming off of pretty tight levels, and it really only just beginning to advance. What we have certainly seen, though, in the stock market is that, and indeed in the currency markets, is that investors are not hanging around. We've had a fairly substantial pullback already, and that too is where we have short-term oversold conditions. And most particularly, I think we can say that about the renminbi. The renminbi strengthened, or sorry, the dollar strengthened through 6.8 yesterday, and it's approaching almost 6.9 today. It's quite clear on this chart that this has represented a picking up in the pace of the dollar's advance overall. The last thing that the Chinese want is an unruly depreciation. That would raise the prospect of capital flight. They're trying their best to close loopholes and to stop capital flight, but there is certainly a challenge in doing that, not least because a large number of the most wealthy of people in the country are also members of the Communist Party, and then they are weighing their personal interests against the country's interests. And well, we know how that generally works. Personal interests generally win out. So there is little prospect of all the loopholes being closed, and because there is such a financial gain to be found from keeping at least some of them open. And then that does raise the specter of capital flight. And if the US dollar is raising interest rates and becomes a more hospitable environment overall, both from a corporate tax and an interest rate friendly regime overall for international investors, then the potential for money to flow out of China and back into the US is quite a potential issue for the Chinese, because they need a weaker currency certainly to help to ameliorate some of the pressures from rationalizing the coal and the cement and the steel sectors, but they don't want to see their currency accelerating lower due to capital flight restrictions. What they could potentially do is what they did in 1994. In 1994, they went for a one-off. They had been through this period where the dollar had been going up against the renminbi, and then they just went for a very large one-off devaluation, and that really did then mark the end. Now, you can see that we have a very different environment now. It's a much more liquid currency overall, and it is becoming increasingly internationalized. There are obvious risks with a one-off depreciation, but unfortunately, that is a it is not an imminent risk. I really don't think it is an imminent risk at all, but it is a potential medium-term risk if capital flight becomes a problem, and they are trying their best to clamp down on it right now. But it is certainly something that we need to keep an eye on. And when we look at the Nikkei, and it is appreciating because the currency is going down, then it is worth taking a look at, for example, the FTSE 350, because the index is not going up because the pound has been a bit firmer, but it has closed its overextension relative to the trend mean, and it has at least paused in the region of 3,700, and this is really where demand will have to come back and reassert itself overall. I don't think that there's much of an appetite in Whitehall for a substantially stronger currency. But what we definitely have seen now is that this has been a relatively equal-sized rally within the context of a medium-term downtrend overall. And that 125 is probably enough of a hurdle to hold the pound back, and not least because of such acute uncertainty within Europe. It is November 16th, and the Italians are voting on whether to accept reform of to the Senate on the 4th of December, and coincidentally, so is the Austrians are voting on who to appoint as their next president. Now, the president's position in Austria is not a powerful position; it's more symbolic. But there is the and in fact, the election was run last June, and it was annulled because of irregularities in postal voting. But back then, the immigration crisis was front and center. That has ebbed somewhat, but it was a competition between a far-right candidate and a more conventional candidate, and the margin was very, very tight indeed. There is further evidence, potentially on December 4th, that populism is gaining increasing footholds in the Eurozone. And that is helping to put additional downward pressure on the euro. Now, we know that that the last time that the euro got down to these levels, it had very clear upward dynamics. And there is a deep short-term oversold condition as it goes through 107 today. It's closing out today around 106 and change. And but a clear upward dynamic is going to be required to check the momentum overall. There are quite clear risks associated with the Eurozone, and if it isn't the Italian referendum, then it could be the French election, presidential election, and if it isn't the French one, then it could be the Dutch one. You know that there is plenty of opportunity for very disgruntled voters to have their say. And against the background here of quite over bought conditions for the dollar, then I think the gold price is worth taking a look at as well, because it has fallen so very, very quickly and is now right back at the region of a previous area of support around $1,200, and it has at least stopped going down. But obviously, what it really does need is a clear upward dynamic to confirm that that people are pressuring shorts, and that some of the very bearish sentiment is at least ebbing, and that people are beginning to look and see value. Palladium is the one precious metal that is behaving more like an industrial metal, and it has bounced rather emphatically and is now testing the upper side of its range, so it is a little bit overbought in the short term. And copper prices, having surged on the election news, are pausing. That we've had an absolutely emphatic break of a medium-term downtrend, but now we get a little bit of consolidation, and I suspect that copper is likely to offer a more attractive entry opportunity in the next couple of weeks. But when we look at this and see that it has broken a more than 5-year downtrend, then I think recovery potential has to be the medium-term prognosis overall. And then we look at the bond markets, and there are an increasing number of very experienced bond managers starting to look at this market and think that the lows are in terms of the yield. The yield has gone up faster than it has at any time in the last 3 years, and it has broken the progression of lower rally highs that's been there since the beginning of 2014. Now, it qualifies as a failed downside break, that the yield went to a new low in July and was not able to sustain it. And now it is pushing right back up, and I don't think we would anticipate that it is going to run into any real trouble until it gets up to test the 2.5% area. Then I think investors will begin to think and stop and pause and think, what exactly is going to happen next? Are we going to pursue the buy the dip strategy that has been so successful for nearly 30 years, or do we look on Ali Rally as a potential area to begin to liquidate positions? There is absolutely no doubt that particularly long-dated bonds are more susceptible to interest rates than just about any other asset class, whereas both property and stocks generally tend to offer a better hedge overall. And of course, that is because what we get with stocks and property is the ability to raise dividends and raise prices overall, and to also to raise rents. So the Dow Jones broke out to new highs last week, and it has so far held on to those. The Russell 2000 did the same. The S&P 500 has bounced from the region of the moving average, hasn't quite made new highs yet, and the Nasdaq has stabilized. We are definitely seeing that a number of the very high-flying mega cap technology shares have at least paused and bounced in the region of their respective trend means. But they're going to have to do more than that to, I think, rebuild confidence. And there is certainly the potential that the relatively less expensive and sectors that have not particularly participated in the advance in the stocks this year are likely to lead us into the end of the year and into the first quarter of next year, that we have definitely had a very large rotation taking place. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.